we'll be discussing Senate File 3567. It's the Omnibus Education Policy Bill. We have the delete all amendment is what we'll be working with, and we'll take testimony for those that signed up. And there's a number of you, 2, 4, 6, 8, after the walkthrough. So that's the plan as of now. So, Ms. Lewis, whenever you're ready.
Ms. Chair, members, if everyone can pull out their delete all amendment language. I will go through, walk through articles 1 through 5, and then Mr. Arneson will do the remaining articles. So beginning on Article 1, Section 1, on the front at General Education, the first section came from the agency's bill, and it is relating to post-secondary enrollment options and when the post-secondary institution needs to notify the pupil's school about withdrawal or being absent from the PSEA course. Section 2 is from the agency bill again, and it is related to online instruction and accessibility of that instruction. The next section, Section 3, is also from the agency bill, and it was a some language that was missed when they recodified the Online Learning Options Act. And it relates to supplemental online course fees. Section 4 gets us to page 4. That's another section from the agency bill. And it updates language from desegregation to achievement and integration plans. Then section 5 on page 5 is a revisor instruction, and again from the agency bill. And it changes references in care and treatment program related to the Online Options Act. So that's all of Article 1. Then Article 2, Education Excellence, which is on page 5, is the first section is from the agency bill, and it is related to student data that can be shared with the Department of Economic or Employment and Economic Development. Section 2 is also from the agency bill and allows for excused absences for cultural observances. Section 3 is from combined from the agency bill, which is striking some obsolete language, and then Senator Mitchell's Senate File 3617, which is related to physical and sexual abuse prevention education. And those changes are on page 7. Then page 8, section 4, section 4 and section 5 are from the agency's bill and relate to the proficiency levels for the bilingual SEALs. Then section 6 on page 10 is from the agency bill. And it is a delay of the government and citizenship requirement for graduation. Section 7 is another section from the agency bill, and it provides for districts to have a language access policy as part of their world's best workforce plan, beginning in 2025-2026 school year. Section 8. Is a change in the reporting date for the rigorous course-taking reporting, and again from the agency bill. Section 9, which is at the bottom of page 13, is from Senator Mitchell's Senate File 3617, as well as Section 10. Section 11, on page 14, is a technical correction from kind of a remainder from last year's recodification of the testing statutes. So that section is correcting a cross-reference. Section 12 is putting in language that is codified elsewhere in the statute, so it's deleting that language. Section 13 is recodifying the language for prohibiting retaliation, moving it to where it'd be more appropriate. Section 14 relocates and rewords some language within that same section and into another section. as far as relocation goes. Section 15, which is, gets us to page 17, is removing some duplicated language and then add some language that was moved from the prior section. And then section 16, which gets us to page 19, is an agency language, and it removes some duplicated reporting requirements. Section 17 changes the reporting date from September 1 to December 1 for performance standards. Section 18, which gets us to page 21, is the smudging language, which is from Senator Kunesh's bill, Senate file 2998. Section 19 is a single section from Senator Mann's bill, or the amendment that came in, Senate file 1318, regarding paraprofessional training. Section 20 is from Senator Swazinski's Senate file 3999, regarding student journalism policies. That gets us to page 23, which is section 21 from the agency bill, and it is a clarification that the protections under the school fee law are applicable to tribal contract schools. Section 22 is another provision from the agency's bill, and it relates to English language learner parent notification. Then section 23, which gets us to 24, page 24, is again from the agency bill, and it's clarifying that the English language development standards are applicable to English language learner programs. Section 24 is the repealer, and it's all from the agency bill, and that's, I forget one of them. One of them is the recodified in one of the earlier sections, which is the retaliation prohibited subdivision. And then the other one is a statement about statewide testing, which is coded elsewhere in the statutes. And then that gets us to Article 3, Mr. Chair. That's on middle of page 25. And I believe the entirety of these sections come from Senate File 4560, which was the Pelsby bill. The section one is a reporting year clarification. Section two is another reporting, but it's the teacher supply and demand report. It clarifies the date as well as what data is included in that report. Section three gives the timeline for when the Board of School Administrators is to take over licensing administrators, and is some clarity for the Pelsby's authority to collect non-licensed staff data and on behalf of the Department of Education. Section four is related to, before five and six, I believe, are related to special education licenses for tier one and tier two and the requirements for those licenses. Section seven is a more of a clarification that a person who does the licensure via portfolio process is recommended for licensure versus being granted an actual license. Section eight is an extension of the ability to be eligible for a tier four license if a person does a licensure via portfolio process or holds a national board certification. Section nine, which gets us to the middle of page 30 from the Pelsey bill, is clarifying that the person who holds a board certification is not required to take the content or pedagogy test. Section 31, page 31, section 10, removes a reference to the basic skills exam for teachers. Section 11 is language from the Pelsey bill that prohibits a person who's been charged with certain crimes from being placed in a teaching assignment. Section 12 and Section 13 go together in that they're the changes or clarification that the standards of effective practice apply in the teacher development and evaluations. And one section is for cities of the first class, and the other section is applicable to non-first class city school districts. That gets us to page 37. Section 14 updates the reference or the definition of heritage language and culture teacher. Then section 15 allows Pelsby to prioritize certain applicants for the heritage language and cultural teacher licensure pathway program. Section 16 is allowing for the teacher mentorship grants to be expanded to tribal contract schools. Section 17 is a repealer from the Pelsby bill. The first paragraph A is the alternative teacher preparation report, and paragraph B is the a subdivision that required remediation for teacher candidates that did not pass the skills exam, which is no longer required. Article 4 gets us to page 39. And this article in its entirety are the policy-only provisions from Senator May Quaid's Senate file 3689, which was the READ Act. And I guess in respect of time, I was not going to go through each section because that was already covered in that bill hearing recently. And there was no changes to any of that language from when it was heard before the committee. Then that would get us to Article 5, which is on page 47. Section 1 is from the agency bill, and it updates the ages for early childhood special education services for students with developmental delays. Section 2 is from Senator Seeberger's Senate file 4212, and it allows for a school district to perform a developmental adapted physical education assessment without doing a, or as a standalone evaluation without doing a comprehensive evaluation unless a parent requests such an evaluation. Section 3, which gets us to the bottom of page 50, is again from the agency bill, and it provides a specific rule reference for part eligibility for Part C definition. Section 4 is another provision from the agency bill, and it clarifies when alternative instruction is allowed before a referral for a special education evaluation. Section 5 on the middle of page 51 is from Senator Bolden, Senate file 3942, and it allows for a working group for special education reciprocity, licensure reciprocity. And that is all there is that I will cover. Mr. Arneson will do the next articles.
Mr. Arneson.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll be covering articles 6 through 10. Article 6 begins on page 52 of the DE text. Article 6 in general is a combination of elements from the agency policy bill and from Senator Gustafson's Senate file 3450. Section 1 requires a charter school to identify its purposes in the charter contract, provide certain documentation, and requires that that documentation is a component of the authorizer's performance review of the school. Section 2 is from the agency bill, clarifying the definition of charter management organization and educational management organization. And then the new language at the top of page 54 is from the Gustafson bill, and it slightly narrows the definition of immediate family for the purposes of charter school conflicts of interest. Section 3 begins on page 54. The new language is in the middle of page 55, and it provides additional cross-references to the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act the sections which would be applicable to charter schools. Section 4, in the middle of page 55, is from the Gustafson Bill. It clarifies the roles, responsibilities of authorizers, establishes certain statutory duties, provides that an authorizer's responsibilities include duties relating to charter school formation, contracting, oversight, and evaluation. Language at the top of page 56 in paragraph C prohibits the commissioner from requiring additional roles or responsibilities of authorizers beyond those in statute or in the charter contract. And paragraph D requires certain documentation of from the authorizer of successful annual training of its staff members. In the middle of page 56, section 5 comes from the agencies bill, and it just clarifies that an organization that has applied to the commissioner for approval as an authorizer is not yet an authorizer. Page 57, section 6, comes from the Gustafson bill relating to review of the commissioner by the commissioner. It requires the commissioner to transmit the authorizer performance report to each school authorized by that authorizer, and it requires the commissioner to publish authorizer performance review information for at least 12 months before those criteria take effect. In the middle of page 58, section 7 removes information required from a charter school, from a prospective charter school operator, removes the statement of assurances. This came from the agency's bill, and I understand that this statement would be duplicative of other information already known to the commissioner. Page 59, section 8, comes from the agency bill. This section removes redundant required information from the authorizer affidavit, provides that the grades and the number of primary enrollment sites for a charter school can only be modified under the statutory process. Page 60, section 9, relating to adding these grades or sites, clarifies the information required when a charter school seeks to add additional grades or sites. Page 61, section 10, spans about five pages in the DE, and these all relate to the formation of the board of directors, its sort of ongoing structure, membership criteria, et cetera. The new language on page 64 regarding nepotism policy in paragraph B, some new language on page 65 regarding certain required training for board members. On page 66, section 11 comes from the agency bill and clarifies certain disclosures when a charter school is entering into a contract, lease, or purchase from an authorizer or these roles connected with an authorizer. Section 12, regarding causes for non-renewal or termination of the charter contract, the new language in the near the top of page 67 requires that the hearing be recorded by audio, video, or by a court reporter, and that recording be preserved for a period of 3 years and made available to the public. Near the bottom of page 67, section 13 comes from the agency's bill and clarifies that, or actually prohibits a pre-operational charter school from changing its authorizer. So the authorizer that that's servicing that pre-operational school is the one to make the ready to open determination. Page 68, section 14, the new language at the top of page 69 clarifies the criteria under which the children of a staff member of a charter school are eligible for enrollment preference. And the new language in paragraphs F and G at the bottom of page 69 clarify certain sort of conflict of interest provisions and the circumstances under which a student is sort of formally considered withdrawn from a charter school. Page 70, section 15 prohibits a charter school from contracting with a CMO or EMO to provide its teachers. That's from the agency bill. Page 70, section 16 establishes certain qualifications, criteria for charter school administrators, requires certain training for those administrators, conflict of interest requirements, and prohibits a charter school administrator from serving on the board of directors of another charter school. And page 72, section 17 prohibits a charter school employee or board member from serving on the board or on a decision-making committee of the school's authorizer, and requires a charter school employee or school board member to disclose to the board any compensation that that person receives from the school's authorizer. Section 18 comes from the agency's bill. It strikes language relating to charter school financial management. This stricken language is recodified later in section 20. Page 74, section 19, relating to information, requires a charter school to disseminate information about the school to certain targeted groups, and identifies those targeted groups, and requires that the school's dissemination activities be a component of the authorizer's performance review of the school. Section 20, relating to use of state money, requires a charter school to adopt a procurement policy. It requires that all purchases of the charter school be made consistent with that procurement policy. Subdivision 5 authorizes the commissioner to reduce the charter school's state aid in cases of policy violation. Subdivision 6 is essentially the recodification of that stricken language I mentioned earlier in Section 18. That concludes Article 6, Charter Schools. Article 7 begins on page 76 of the DE. Section 1 is from the agency bill and clarifies eligibility for nonprofit multi-site sponsoring organizations who are applying for participation in the federal child and adult care food program or summer food service program. Section 2 comes from Senator Kunesh's Senate File 4545 and exempts the executive director of the Metropolitan Library Service Agency, or MELSA, from the criteria under Minnesota rule that would otherwise require that director to hold a master's degree in library science. Section 3, beginning on page 77, is a modified version of what appeared in the MDE policy bill. This section governs access to school library materials, not just school, but all library materials. Subdivision 1 describes the types of libraries subject to the policy. Paragraph B is new language, not earlier in the agency's bill, that describes the circumstances under which a library staffer or a library board could engage in collection management. Subdivision 2, paragraph B, the first sentence is a restatement of what had previously been in the agency bill. And it's otherwise fairly similar in purpose from what appeared earlier in the agency's bill. That concludes Article 7. Article 8, Health and Safety, begins on page 78. Section 1 is a combination of the agency's language and language from Senator Gustafson's 3369. The new language at lines 22 and 23 are from the Gustafson bill relating to telehealth. And the new and stricken language at the top of page 79 is from the agency's bill regarding legitimate exceptions for instruction conducted by a tribal, spiritual, or cultural advisor. Section 2 is from a Senator Bolden bill, Senate File 3461, regarding healthy aging and dementia education and resources from the commissioner. Section 3 is from the agency bill, and it clarifies that, well, it removes the requirement that the school health services specialist employed at the department have experience overseeing a budget, supervising personnel, and have a graduate degree in nursing, public health education, or a related field. Section 4 is from a Gustafson bill, Senate File 3369. This is the other section relating to access to space for mental health care through telehealth. Section 5 on page 81 is from a Senator Bolden bill, Senate File 4451. Actually, the next three sections are from that bill as amended and clarify the authorities for licensed nurse in term, with regard to administration of drugs or medicine in school settings. On page 82, section 8 clarifies that the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act applies also to charter schools. On page 83, section 9 is from, and I should have said that section 8 comes from the agency bill. Page 83, section 9 is from a Senator Mann bill relating to students pulled out of class and certain notice and record keeping requirements. That bill was Senate File 3974. On page 83, section 10 comes from a Senator Coleman bill, Senate File 3771, regarding the duties of the high school league to provide school coaches with certain eating disorder resources. Section 11 on page 83 comes from the agency's bill, and it clarifies the Department of Education's responsibility to screen and investigate allegations of maltreatment involving students at least 18, but not yet 22 years of age. And that concludes Article 8. Article 9 begins on page 84 of the DE. The first two sections come from the agency's bill and just strike and then later recodify a definition for pre-kindergarten. Section 3 spans quite a number of pages, five or six pages, and this section is also from the agency bill. It the effect of the section is to modify certain eligibility criteria for the voluntary pre-kindergarten program to some degree to combine the program requirements for the VPK and the School Readiness Plus program. And once those programs are combined you'll see later in the repealer, to repeal the School Readiness Program, School Readiness Plus program altogether. On page 90, there's a section 4 that's a little bit misplaced in this article and will be later put into Article 10 where it properly belongs, but Section 4 relates to the duties of the P-12 Education Partnership. Article 10 creates a standalone council that is then the State Council for the Interstate Compact on Educational Opportunity for Military Children, and so those duties are removed here from the P-20 Council and given later to the standalone council. Page 91, Section 5, relating to family eligibility for early learning scholarships. You'll see the new language at 92.10, and it extends eligibility for an early learning scholarship to a child whose parent or guardian is themselves in need of child protection or is in foster care. Page 92, Section 6, comes from the agency's bill. And gives application priority for an early learning scholarship to children who are themselves in a substance use or mental health treatment program, or who have an individualized education program or IEP, or an individualized family service plan or IFSP. On page 93, section 7, the revisor instruction is related to the what I described earlier, the combination of the VPK and the School Readiness Plus programs. It's just an instruction of the revisor to remove references to the School Readiness Plus program. And Section 8 is the repealer of the School Readiness PLUS program, and all of these VPK school readiness sections would be effective July 1, 2025. That concludes Article 9. Article 10 begins on page 94 of the DE. It has two sections. The first section comes from the agency's policy bill relating to the establishment of the Military Interstate Children's Compact State Council. And there was a question when we heard this bill in committee about membership of that council from the Senate. And you can see there at page 94, lines 18 and 19, that the language has been slightly modified from what we heard in committee to require that the member of the Senate of any caucus be appointed by the subcommittee on committees of the Committee on Rules Administration. And finally, section 2 is from the agency's bill relating to intra-state student transfers for children of military service members, and it provides certain rights and protections for children of Army National Guard and Air National Guard members when the children in those families transfer between Minnesota public schools. That concludes the walkthrough of the DE and the summary, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson, and again, thank you, Ms. Lewis. Testifiers, we have Commissioner Jett first up.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Willie Jett, and I serve as the Commissioner of Education. I am grateful for the opportunity to provide testimony on the Senate's Comprehensive Education Policy Omnibus today. First, I extend my gratitude to Chair Swedzinski and the committee for incorporating all of the governor's education policy proposals in this omnibus bill. These initiatives represent crucial updates, safeguards, and assistance essential for the success of our students and educational communities. Our proposed measures address various aspects, from ensuring the integrity of pivotal statutes like online instruction and the READ Act, to rectifying issues within teacher licensure statutes to ensure the provision of high-quality educators, particularly for students in special education programs. Moreover, this bill underscores our commitment to our English learner students and their families by mandating districts and schools to establish and publicize language access plans. This ensures clarity regarding rights and interpretation procedures within our educational institutions. We value the constructive dialogues that have transpired within the legislature and in our engagements with education partners. These discussions have emphasized the importance of acknowledging the contributions of our professional librarians and maintaining Minnesota's public libraries as accessible sources of information for all. Furthermore, this bill advances the progress initiated last year concerning charter schools. It enhances the accountability, provides stability for students and families associated with charter schools, and ensures responsible management of public funds. And again, we are grateful for the committee's time and anticipate our continued collaboration in fostering safe, healthy, and supportive teaching and learning environments in our schools. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, for your attention.
Commissioner, can you stick around for a while? I mean, after the testifiers, or do you have to go?
I do have to go, but for you, I will be right here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Thank you very much for the opportunity to share a few brief remarks, and also to you, Mr. Chairman and members, for the opportunity to work with you throughout the session and meet with us and hear about our concerns and proposals. It's greatly appreciated. As we were putting our legislative platform together and I was surveying our board members, two things really rose quickly to the top. Number one was a request for supplemental funding, which you're probably not surprised at, but our districts have made it clear that they're really in need of some supplemental funding to address the inflationary cost pressures and also to help implement all the new programs that were adopted last year. Number two, and really equally on their list, was a plea to please not adopt any new mandates during the 24 legislative session. And so I want to thank you, Mr. Chair. I know you've had that in your mind and members as you've put together your bill and really have limited the number of new requirements. We're especially thankful for the delaying of the government and citizenship requirement for 1 year, which will greatly help our district's better plan for that implementation. Greatly appreciate the READ Act amendments and some additional flexibility there. Very supportive of the special education licensure reciprocity work group and hoping good things will come out of that and help us address the workforce shortage in that area. At the same time, there are some new requirements and mandates, as you know, in the bill. One in particular, the additional requirements on the world's best workforce. That's something that ever since that's been implemented in 2013, every session we've seen proposals to add more requirements onto the world's best workforce. We've always resisted that. We think the original intention was really to require a comprehensive strategic plan with the overarching, first it was five goals, now there are four goals because one was moved into the READ Act. And then the idea was really to let individual school districts decide how to meet those goals and not dictate the specific steps or strategies. And so our board members would greatly appreciate to adhering to that. The proposal that is in the bill to add on world's best workforce language access, we don't oppose that at all, but we're saying let's put that in a different section of law. Let's keep the world's best workforce in a streamlined place that it is now. And then also, just as you're looking at new curricular requirements, new reporting requirements, notification requirements, just please keep in mind the less burdensome you can make them, or if you can push effective dates out a year, as our districts really work to implement the READ Act, the universal meals, the non-exclusionary discipline, and all the other comprehensive proposals that were adopted last session. They would greatly appreciate some breathing room to make sure that those are implemented successfully. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonkus, and you'll stick around as well. I'm not going to keep saying that, but appreciate if everybody can stick around until we hear from everybody. Mr. Shaver.
Chair Swidzinski, members of the committee, good afternoon. My name is Matt Shaver, and I'm the policy director at Ed Allies. We advocate for policies that support students and close outcome gaps. Thank you for the opportunity to share our thoughts on Senate File 3567 as amended. We're thrilled to see the needed and reasonable adjustments from Senator Makewade's leadership on the READ Act, such as communicating student progress with families at mid-year, ensuring staff in early childhood programs are appropriately trained in structured literacy, and continuing to set reasonable deadlines by which educators on all tiers of license get the quality literacy training they deserve. These will all serve to push our system of literacy instruction toward better outcomes for kids. We also support the inclusion of Senator Mann's bill that requires schools to attempt to notify families for unplanned removals. For those who have argued this would be untenable, we'd ask you to listen carefully to your own argument. If these unscheduled removals are happening so frequently, perhaps that's a sign this practice needs some transparency and accountability. This proposal offers a reasonable path toward that. Thank you, Chair Swidzinski, for including those proposals in your omnibus bill. We continue to have concerns with new proposed Tier 1 and Tier 2 special education licensure requirements. We do support limiting Tier 1 special education licenses to 3 years to align our state's licensure system with IDEA. However, much of what the rest of what Pelsby proposes for special education licensure is unclear or duplicative and has the potential to erect barriers for current and for future special education teachers. If unchanged, these proposals could exacerbate the teacher shortage and impede progress toward diversifying the teacher workforce. We have communicated our feedback, questions, concerns, and suggestions to Pelsby since this language was introduced last month. Our concerns are legitimate, reasonable solutions are within reach, and yet disappointingly, we have not gotten a response. Finally, we are concerned with the Department of Education's proposal to push back public reporting on the MCAs to December. The current language that the commissioner must publicly report this information to our state's report card website by September 1st has been in law since 2004. Minnesota has managed to meet this requirement rooted in transparency and accountability for two decades, and we don't see a good reason to abandon it now. Thank you, Chair Swedzinski and committee staff for the work you've led this session. I really did learn something new each hearing. Thank you, Chair, for being willing to consider our feedback today. Thank you, committee members, for your public service to our state.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Mr. Aronson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Roger Ernst, and I represent the Elementary and Secondary Principal Associations, as well as the State High School League. First of all, as joining in with the previous speaker's comments, we want to thank the committee for working with us, particularly with the staff as well. And we found that you folks actually have been very responsive when we've had questions and wanted to talk about things. And when you wanted to talk about things, particularly the READ Act, that there's been a tremendous amount of outreach to our organizations. We appreciate Senator McQuaid's efforts in that. And we obviously, school principals are deeply interested in the READ Act and what's happening about that. That's the number one topic on people's conversations. Four things I just wanted to bring to your attention. First of all, school principals continue to have a concern about the student journalism provisions in here, but we are deeply appreciative of the fact that you accepted yearbooks from that. That makes takes care of a lot of the heartburn I think that we had. Yearbooks continue to be a challenge for schools to make sure that they're in the fashion that we want to have them. I want to comment on the pullout language. I had thought of speaking the other night, and then it just did not happen, but I think there's a little amendment. You might want to look at that as the process goes through, and that's to say that the teacher, principal, or their designee would be making the contacts to the parents there. I think that's practically what we would have been doing, and just something to think about as we're looking at fixing that, because currently it says a personal call from the teacher or the principal. We may very well be assigning that to a staff member. On the eating disorder piece, I just wanted to bring that to your attention. Again, we think that's a very good provision. We're already making plans to incorporate that into coaches' training through the Minnesota State High School League. And then finally, Article 3, Section 3, you are transferring the responsibility for licensure of administrators from Pelsby to BOSA. And one of the things we want you to watch about that as that goes along, BOSA's a pretty thin shop in terms of staffing and budget. And there is some cost to that transfer. And I know we're not the finance committee here, but that is going to impact their operations. And I want to draw that to your attention so that we can talk about that. BOSA is funded with an appropriation that comes from you folks, but there's a requirement that all of the administrators pay a fee annually that equals the amount of what your appropriation is. So if that's going to go up substantially, that would increase that fee substantially as well. There are only four licenses that end up in BOSA: principals, superintendents, community ed, and special ed directors. So that's something we want you to look at closely. And frankly, we've made some discussion about trying to bring those organizations together, Pelsby and BOSA, and the department, to talk about how we're going to affect that in the future. So we do appreciate the bill. And as Mr. Kronquist mentioned earlier, we actually appreciate a lot of stuff that's not in here. If there's one thing people had a request this year, we are still trying to implement a lot of the stuff that happened last year and to support those initiatives that you passed, and to do that in good faith and with fidelity. And so we appreciate the scope of this. So thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. Next up, Ms. Dozeland and then Ms. Snyder are the next two speakers, testifiers.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozeland, and I'm wearing two hats today. The first is for the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and I would just like to reiterate some of the comments you heard from AMSD regarding the language access plans. We do have concerns about that being included in World's Best Workforce. We have met with the department and talked about some other options, and one of the options that we had encouraged them to consider was that this information would be put on their website and in the student handbook. I recall the department's testimony when they went over their recommendations that they wanted to make sure that this was in a spot that was transparent and easily accessible for parents. I don't know about you, but I don't know where to find World's Best Workforce plans. I think most parents know to go to their school district website to get information about their school district and think that the website or the student handbook is a better spot. And then representing the Minnesota administrators for special education. Would just like to thank the chair and members for including two provisions. The first was the working group on looking at special education reciprocity to try to streamline that process. And then also a small piece to try to eliminate the amount of special ed paperwork, but to allow for a standalone developmental assessment of physical education. Appreciate that, and I think it will, those will both do good things in the areas of kids being served with special ed. So thank you.
Ms. Snyder, if you could take a second, please. The commissioner has to leave at 1:30, and we'd like to honor one of our members that has a question for him. So if you don't mind, Ms. Snyder, taking a few minutes. Commissioner Jett. Whenever you're ready, Senator.
Well, thanks, and Mr. Chair and Commissioner, I'm glad to have you here. Actually, I wish that there could be more time for a discussion with the committee as a whole. To talk about where Minnesota is going with its education and really what the commissioner sees as the needs that we need to be doing. And most times he comes in as a short comment on whatever bill is in front of us, but not really his thoughts and dreams for that. So that's not time today, Mr. Chair. But I do have some questions just on the content of the bill. And I think sometime even after deadline, a real discussion about how we're really doing and what the department sees in headed by this very qualified gentleman. Commissioner, if I would not have said anything in public or to you privately, I would not ask you these questions. And do you mind if I ask you a couple hard questions?
Chair, Senator Abler, go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So meeting with my district, and I know you've listened to us and our comments, and I know you've talked to dozens and dozens of superintendents, you know that there's a lot of trouble in River City, as it were, that there's challenges with, the READ Act, you're working on that, I appreciate that. There's challenges with math, there's challenges with discipline, attendance, and frankly, results. And so, can you tell me, with the work that your department brought out, how is this going to make a difference on math scores?
Chair, Senator Abler, in terms of the entire bill and the policies and everything that goes with it, I think it's a collective approach. And so you're getting specific to math. That's what I believe that you asked. And so there's superintendents that are in the audience. There's people all across the state that have had input in terms of how we're going to approach it. I don't think it's a one-pronged method to go about that. There are things within the proposals that give districts some flexibility in terms of how they want to do it individually within their sites or within their district or within specific grade levels.
Mr. Chair. I like you. I don't want to do this to you. Mr. Commissioner Jett, there's nothing in here. This is the sum of the math discussions about how we're going to improve outcomes. This is the sum of information about discipline, about how we're going to help students that are kicked out. I just talked to my superintendent, who I know you know, and what they're begging for is some way to find a way to get a plan for the child who was kicked out at noon, who was throwing chairs and laptops around. He gets to come back tomorrow at 7:45 or whenever, and without a plan. And so how does that help the kid? Mr. Chair, I have an amendment that will offer a little bit of time that perhaps we can do, but there's nothing in here about fixing the discipline problem that we all know. There's nothing here about attendance. Commissioner, it's not working. And I don't know what to do. This bill, when it goes home, this gets done. This is going to be dusting up the edges, cleaning up a few details. It's crucial updates, like little updates. But at the end, my district has no more tools to handle the discipline problems that were exacerbated by last year's work that everybody knows we should have had something about. We didn't spend any time talking about it. And in the bill, there wasn't a word. And so, if we bring some amendments forward to try to fix this, can you please talk to your people and take them in good faith that we need to work together? There's hardly any, it's not your fault, but there's hardly any ideas from across the aisle in this bill that could show how to make it work. It's like everything is amazing and it's going phenomenally. And I just want to encourage you, Commissioner, as we go forward, I'm sorry, I feel like I should apologize to you just for even saying this stuff in public, but I have been talking about it for a long time and to you privately. And so on behalf of my district and the 800,000 or so kids, they need us to do real stuff. So I'll let them respond, Mr. Chair.
And sorry, Commissioners. Senator, we are taking amendments on Wednesday. So yeah. If you care to bring those forward, that'd be great. Senator or Commissioner Chad.
Senator, okay. Chair and Senator Abler. And so, yes, you and I have had conversations publicly, privately, and I believe many of the individuals in this room and superintendents and principals all across the state, the attention to detail in terms of you're asking for a specific remedy as it relates to discipline. You talked about math, you talked about discipline, you talked about a few different things. You got specific in terms of an individual child or student having an episode in a classroom. And again, I'm going to say that it's not a one fix for all. There are some districts, I'm not going to say all, because as I've been touring, as we at MDE have been touring across the state, trying to figure out exactly how to support schools and listening to people in certain facilities, I don't believe there is any quick fix. I do believe some districts say that some things that have been added and that we've asked to implement, they are seeing some, I'm not going to use the word some, they are seeing an end to a situation. But I think we can always do better, because you said you don't want to do this to me in terms of putting me publicly on alert as I'm sitting here. But you don't necessarily have to do that, because as the Commissioner of Education in charge of approximately 870,000 students, I'm already on alert. As a former superintendent, I've been on alert for that. And I speak for others across the state. That is a concern, not just throughout districts, but yes, here in the Senate, yes, throughout the entire legislature. And that is something that we are trying to support and do differently.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. And actually, Commissioner, I know you're alerted, I just put you on the spot. So, and I'm trying to be respectful about that, and I'm uncomfortable necessarily doing that, but I know there's a lot of people that are happy I'm just bringing it up. They're saying, what are we supposed to do? I have teachers that the special ed people, some of them stay up all night doing reports. And there was a provision in your bill that didn't make it in this one to make that somewhat streamlined. And so maybe we should talk about that some more. And no, there's not one thing, but there's 100 things. But as you continue in your tenure, and I can't wait to vote for you to confirm you, because I know what's in your heart. And so I appreciate the discussion, and I'll drop it for now, Mr. Chair, but I'm sincere in that. And so the amendments that we bring forward, just that might have been kind of good ideas or didn't have a chance to get heard, I hope that your people can listen with some openness to some of those ideas. They won't be clever, I promise you. Thank you.
Chair and Senator, thank you. Always willing to listen, always willing to engage.
Other questions for the Commissioner before he steps away?
Also, you can always put me on the hot seat.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Commissioner. Thanks for your patience, Ms. Snyder.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Caitlin Snyder, and I am a lobbyist for Education Minnesota. On behalf of our 86,000 educators, including aspiring teachers, active educators, and retirees, I'm here to provide feedback on today's Delete All Amendment. We support the change that requires our special education teachers with a Tier 1 or Tier 2 license to receive intensive mentorship and to show progress towards full professional licensure. This should be considered the bare minimum required to bring Minnesota into compliance with the federal government and to meet the needs of our 160,000 kids on an IEP. We support the inclusion of policies to prevent politically motivated book bans, Our members still face retaliation or censure for teaching books like The Bluest Eye, which address systemic racism, colorism, poverty, and abuse, the last item being something that the committee is asking all schools to educate students on. We support the language providing our education support professionals a seat at the table when deciding on professional development. This will only become more important as more requirements like the READ Act paraprofessional training come down the pike. Our special education teachers are strongly in support of the change brought by Senator Seeberger to allow developmentally appropriate physical education assessments to be standalone assessments. This will save some teachers dozens of hours. The committee has made the choice to improve some working conditions for some of our members, and we really appreciate these choices. I'd like to provide some comments on the definition of unscheduled in Article 8, Section 9. And to be clear, the safety of our students is the number one priority for educators. Educators are mandated reporters, and making reasonable efforts to protect our students from conditions harmful to health and safety is the second bullet in the Teacher Code of Ethics, second only to providing education in a non-discriminatory manner. But if you're not a teacher or a parent, you might not know how many unscheduled meetings happen with our students. But there are so many of them. For example, a choir teacher might pull a kid to audition for a solo, or a reading corps fellow might pull a student to do a one-on-one reading or lessons on phonemic awareness. A nurse might pull kids to do their vision and hearing exams, or another teacher might pull a kid for a makeup assignment. All of these people would have regular documented contact with a student through academic or support services and would be known to the parent. They would have a legitimate reason to meet with the student. We do not believe it is the intent of the committee to limit these interactions, but wanted to bring this to your attention. As this bill moves through the process, please consider tightening up this language, and we look forward to working with the committee now through signing day. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Snyder. Ms. Dietrich, and then Ms. Wallstein is the last testifier. Oh, Mr. Heller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Denise Dietrich, and I am here today on behalf of the Minnesota School Boards Association and the state's 331 school boards. And we are pleased to be here testifying on Senate File 3567. But before I start my testimony, I would like to begin by acknowledging the school board members and superintendents in the room. They are here for the MSBA MASA Day at the Capitol. So if you wouldn't mind just waving if you're here for Day at the Capitol. Thanks. So first of all, I'd like to begin by thanking the governor for delaying the implementation of the government and citizenship course until the 2025-26 school year. Our districts sincerely appreciate the extra time in that new requirement. We would also like to say thank you for the telemental health provision in Article 8 under health and safety. We sincerely appreciate Senator Gustafson bringing this bill forward and working so closely with us to ensure that it can be implemented in a way that works for students and school administrators. On another note, we very much understand and want to ensure that our non-English speaking families have access to interpreters and other vital school information. But we do disagree about putting those language access plans in the world's best workforce. If the goal is to have more easily accessible information, the world's best workforce isn't the best place. District world's best workforce meetings are not widely attended, and the meeting minutes are not widely read. We have had good conversations with the department on this topic, and we still contend that the language access plans should be included in the parent-student handbook and easily accessible on every school district's websites. Those are the natural places for our families to look. Finally, in Article 7, Section 3, the section on book banning, we acknowledge that this is a priority for the governor. Realizing this, we have had many conversations and email exchanges about the proposed language with both the governor's office and the department. As the result of these discussions, we have provided the MSBA Model Policy 606.5. This library materials policy was something that our school districts, our school boards were asking for. That policy outlines the policy and procedures that have been adopted and utilized by many of our districts already. And the feedback that we have gotten back on that policy is that it really works. So as local elected officials, we ask that our school boards and authority be retained in selection and reconsideration of library materials. We strongly encourage the legislature to include language in the bill for school boards to adopt the MSBA Model Policy 606.5. Further, we respectfully request that the word content be stricken, as its definition is different than idea, viewpoint, opinion conveyed, and message. Mr. Chairman, I would like to add one final thought, and that is that we were disappointed that the redefining instructional hours provision was not included in the bill. This is years of work that from administrators, school board members, and national organizations on what can we do to redefine instructional hours or reform our high school experience. And in the end, all it would do is provide flexibility for local school boards to design learning opportunities around the needs of students, not the number of hours. So with that, I will conclude my comments.
I've been informed it's in Ed Finance, your last point.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Ms. Wallstein, and then Mr. Heller.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Amy Wallstein, and I'm the Senior Policy Director at the Minnesota Business Partnership, an association of over 100 CEOs from Minnesota's largest companies. We are united by a mission of enhancing Minnesota's business competitiveness and ensuring all Minnesotans are prepared for futures in the global economy. We are also united by a deep commitment to improving literacy outcomes. With less than half of Minnesota students reading at grade level, and BIPOC children and children from low-income families consistently scoring 25 to 30 points lower than their white peers, it's clear that the way we've been teaching reading is leaving too many Minnesotans behind. The good news is that, thanks to last year's READ Act, Minnesota will transform the way that reading is being taught. Schools like Monroe Elementary and Brooklyn Park are already showing strong gains in reading, and how the Bridge to Read program is very successful in helping transform a classroom. We applaud the chair for including enhancements for the READ Act in this year's Education Policy Omnibus Bill. However, we would strongly encourage you all to add language that ensures accountability for teacher preparation programs. If we are to transform the system, it must begin in teacher preparation. And without a statewide test that shows us whether teacher candidates have gained knowledge from their preparation programs in the science of reading, we must have accountability mechanisms like having PELSBY review literacy instruction programs. One last word. As you rewrite the testing statutes, I think it's very important that in removing some of the language at 16.4 to 16.31, that we are not inadvertently removing clear direction in statute that assessments must be aligned to the most recent version of state standards. This is a core function of our standards-based accountability system to have that alignment made clear. And throughout the rewrite, it removes several references to alignment, the word alignment in statute. So I just encourage that you're crystal clear that that clear direction on alignment remains. Thank you.
Thank you. And last of our testifiers that are signed up, Mr. Heller, and then we'll open it up for questions by members.
Hi, Senate Policy Committee, come to testify today on the governor's omnibus bill amended. Hi, my name is Rick Heller. I unofficially represent the twice exceptional Minnesota Statute 120B15. And also, the language changed last year from handicapped to print disability individuals. Regarding this bill, on page 14 of this document, on line 9, it adds 508. The legislature plans to do this in October 2024. Also, web content accessibility guidelines. That is missing in the bill. Need to include that. Digital accessibility is relevant for those two people that got merged in 2019 by the Library of Congress Services, which were blind and print disabled due to the book famine. And now they're called eligible persons. Also, last year they funded librarians for school districts. And this year now they're codifying the certification of librarians. But also changed in 2019 after Congress got done ratifying the Marish Treaty. Again, in 2019, they broadened the scope of certifying authority. Used to be a medical doctor, organic in nature. Now it's more than that. It's librarians who came up with the term in 1931. School superintendents, nurses, psychologists, reading specialists, even more if you go to DEED, under Talking Book Radio, under the window to log on to the 24/7 Talking Book Radio, which specifically states on the hour, every hour, this radio station exclusively for the blind and print disabled. Also on the landing page, also mentioned people have difficulty with reading and print disability, blind, vision impaired, and others. You are welcome to look at that. That's all relevant to agencies now being made aware of who is the certifying authority, who has licenses through the educators over there that approve teachers' licensing. For instance, case managers and social workers, obviously, but people that if a nurse can do it, now if a school superintendent can do it, then how are they working on this? How are they making this awareness piece? The other thing that's missing on this page, or should I go, let's frankly go to a different page, the one about librarians need to be included online too. And April 17, 2020, the U.S. Department of Education Office of Civil Rights did a 7-minute stream due to the pandemic warning. It was specifically targeted for school districts being compliant to 508 and libraries. Put it in the bill. Let's include it. I believe the Minister of Education have governance to some capacity over libraries now since they're being funded. Make people aware of this process. And last but least, page 49 to 50. On this banning the books prohibited, I expressed before, maybe in private, but now publicly, that the Talking Book Radio creates books for the blind and print disabled, whoever they are. And that eligible form on the first and last page mentions the library in Faribault, Minnesota. And since that's relevant to, they're actually, go to page 5 and 6. So in fact, I think it's page 5. They actually have 3 checkboxes to restrict certain content to those individuals. What also seems interesting or perhaps troubling is they don't have a sign-off other than the competent authority, such as a parent, to make those decisions on what materials those individuals get, student or otherwise. I think if they're already setting that level, the librarians, or should I say the state is, then how does that plug into requiring school districts? Are they going to follow that? Those are just some of the, last but maybe least, the READ Act.
Mr. Heller, if you could wrap up, you said lastly a minute ago.
An amendment, if possible, through the chair. Regarding the READ Act, is it really that it's a READ Act or is it a review act? At some point, students try to get accommodation or remediation. Okay, or should I say remediation and modification, but at some point it's just accommodation. So you get to see it for sure, perhaps, if not hear it, but feel it. That has to do with digital accessibility at the fullest level. And frankly, I suggest it be the Review Act. Once again, it's and when we get to this state assessment piece on grade level, it needs to be what they understand. The Minnesota Comprehensive is a summative assessment. It's not a comprehension thing. It's what they can do independently. It's what they can understand at 98-99% word recognition on their own. And that's all relevant to what it means to read well. And if it's not silent, are they reading silently or is it an instructional setting? Anyways, that's welcome to feedback and further discussion, but I can thank you for this opportunity to speak, and I'm open to any further conversations here or otherwise.
Thank you, Mr. Heller. Members, questions for any testifiers today? Senator Duckworth, I apologize for that.
No problem. You can call me Zach, Mr. Chair.
All the applause you got today previous meeting this morning, and Senator May Quaid and I sat there not getting the applause that you and Senator Coleman got, it has given me pause for effect.
Mr. Chair, I paid heavily for that applause. Cost me quite a bit of money. Just kidding. I only have some comments, so if Senator May Quaid actually has questions for some folks, I'll defer to her. Thank you.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions, I believe, are for Caitlin and Denise. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Snyder, I'll start with you because I think I had my bill open to your reporter. At least I remember the question. You were talking about the 10-minute pullout and the reporting requirements, and I'm glad we have the chief author of the bill on the committee. The things that you mentioned, like the vision hearing screenings, the choir auditions, the like literacy stuff, is that not that all seems like previously scheduled or part of a learning, part of learning that's happening, and is your read that that's not scheduled?
Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, for the record, Caitlin Snyder, Education Minnesota. Our concern is that we're not sure if those fall under unscheduled or not. So if you had, they're not necessarily appointments, like the nurse might be pulling everyone in third grade this week versus, Baby Snyder has an appointment today. So we're not sure how unscheduled would be read in practice. We don't think that this is the intent, and we want to make sure that we're not overly reading the language.
Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And maybe Senator Mann can speak to it. Would the difference between unscheduled or unplanned might split that difference? Because I really like Senator Mann's bill, and I understand what you're saying. But when you were saying those examples, I was like, those all sound like expected pullouts, whether it's, all third graders this week at some point. I wouldn't expect to get a call because I know my third grader's getting pulled out sometime this week for vision hearing, or that my senior's going to go to the, audition for Bravo at some time this week versus, and we'll just, use the really heartbreaking example, the SRO that was just pulling the student out of class randomly for no specific reason. And so that's what I'm kind of coming up with in my head. I want to find a good place where people feel comfortable in understanding in statute what the goal is and what it's not. Senator Mann,
do you care to? Ms. Snyder.
Mr. Chair, Senator May Quaid, I'll say that Education Minnesota has provided this feedback to Senator Mann, but it was in the context of sort of reworking the language in a way that did not meet Senator Mann's needs. So it's an ongoing conversation about capturing this without destroying the intent of obviously trying to protect our students in a place that they're required to be every day.
Thank you, Senator Mann.
We had these conversations, right? And I think Senator McQuaid kind of touched upon these things. The examples were given were indeed planned or scheduled. Many of the things that were mentioned, parents know well in advance. So we're talking about unplanned, unscheduled pullouts where someone walks to the classroom, opens the door, and says, "Can I please speak to Billy?" And Billy has to leave the room. And no one knows where Billy goes. And no one told the parent that Billy was getting pulled out of the classroom today. That's what we're talking about. And, you know, we talked to multiple stakeholders about it. We talked to families about it. We talked to parents about it. And it seemed that the language was pretty clear what unscheduled means.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think that answers the question, because I just want to dig into that. Ms. Dietrich, I was hoping you could talk to me a little bit about the model policy that the School Boards Association has. And then just to clarify, the ask was that the legislature require districts to adopt the model policy.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Senator McQuaid. I would love to talk about the model policy. It's model policy 606.5, and I can get you a copy of it if you would like it. And I just want to emphasize that this policy became about because of members' request. Terry Morrow from MSBA has talked about the fact that in recent times, this is the number one request he gets for. We've had, you know, requests on book banning. How do we handle it? So this was definitely an act or a model developed based on membership needs. And so the model policy 606.5, as I look at it, I think it really outlines a specific process and yet flexible process on on the selection of library materials in a school library, the access to materials to make sure that everyone has access to the materials. It suggests a process for doing that and in assigning staff, et cetera, et cetera. It has a formal request for reconsideration when there is items in the library that others might, some might want to reconsider. It establishes guidelines for a library material review committee, and it has included in it a right to appeal. If you're not satisfied with the response that you get from the school district, you have the right to appeal. And then I think almost just as important, it has a process for stopping the process, where we've done due diligence, we have taken all the steps that we have outlined in our policy, and now this particular process is complete.
Mr. Chair, and then just the second part of that question was the ask to have the legislature require districts to adopt the model policy.
Mr. Chairman, Senator McQuaid, we think that would be a really good idea. As I said in my testimony, we have had several school districts reach out and say the process is messy, but this model policy does work. It actually gives both parties some level of satisfaction.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, Senator Coleman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to clarify your intent today is questions for testifiers or staff and then comments Wednesday.
And amendments.
Correct, and amendments.
Got it. Thank you.
And I just, yes, and questions for staff as well today. I keep saying testifiers, but I should include staff. So
thank you.
Anybody else?
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just some thoughts based on testimony today and as the bill continues to be worked on. I think the testimony we just received from the representative of the Minnesota School Board Association as it relates to that provision on books and appropriateness of libraries, I think that's a wise approach for us to take. It's not lost on me. I appreciate the evolution of that language in the bill. I think it has moved in a better direction. And in meeting with a group of several superintendents last week, every one of their districts had a policy in place that they found to be satisfactory for those situations. And I think allowing for that will be a good thing in the long run. And they were very inclusive processes, and I think that's something that we can hopefully continue to tease out and make sure that everybody's on board with the approach that we take on it. On page 80, just for consideration regarding the access for space mental health care through telehealth, so specifically I'm going to look at lines 80.19 to 80.21, and it talks about a school may require a student requesting access to space under this section to submit to the school a signed and dated consent form from a student's parent or guardian. I'd like to submit to you, Mr. Chair, to consider changing the word may to must right there. And then on line 80.21, I'd love for you to give consideration to changing the age of 16 to the age 18. This is why, much to do with the discussion we just had about pulling students out of the classroom for 10 minutes or more, sort of unannounced. I would think a parent would want to know if their student is repeatedly requesting to leave the classroom, go somewhere, and get some sort of telehealth or communication with somebody. The fact that we would allow a student just to kind of do that on their own without informing their parent or guardian or saying the school district may require that, but they don't have to, might be a little bit contradictory to the conversation we just had in terms of a student being pulled out of the classroom by somebody. Really keeping parents informed, I think, is critical. Regarding some of the changes to tier licensure on pages 28 and 29, I just want to make sure that, and I know Pelsby's not here, I'd ask him the question. I want to make sure that we're not further limiting the pool of folks that we can have in the classroom with students. There's already a shortage. We all know we talk about that frequently. But I think it would be important for us to know whether or not that could potentially continue to compound that shortage. And the similar language appears on both page 28 and 29. I'll read it to you briefly on lines 28.12 to 28.14. It talks about the applicant receives high-quality professional development that is sustained, intensive, and classroom-focused in order to have a positive and lasting impact on the classroom instruction before and while teaching. So the question I would ask Pelsby if they were here is that something that a teacher can be hired with the understanding that they will receive that, or is that a requirement they have to meet prior to being allowed to be hired or be in the classroom? So just some food for thought there in terms of clarity. Pages 21 to 22, student journalism. I didn't really hear a whole lot of pushback from any of the testifiers here on that, so maybe a compromise has been reached in terms of that language. I just want to make sure that districts and everybody are on board with that, because it could have some implications for them and how they're running schools. Page 21, delaying or changing the date of reporting school, some of the test scores, from September 1st to December 1st. I apologize if I missed it, but I'd be curious to hear why we'd be pushing that back from September to December. To me, it seems pretty relevant to get that information sooner rather than later, especially as they're starting a school year. So maybe we can get somebody to shed some light on why that change is being requested. It might be for a very good reason. And then on page 83, this is the last comment I'll make, Mr. Chair. We talk about the concern of students being pulled out of the classroom, their parents not knowing or their parents being informed. I think it's a valid concern. And I tied it to the issue we discussed earlier, but I think really it's indicative of the very conversation or the very thing that we need to be mindful of here when we are legislating, which is whether it's teachers, whether it's school boards, whether it's parents, in, you know, having a sense of trust in their ability to exercise discretion at their level, given their profession and given the schools that they're running, is important. So anytime that we can strike that balance, be mindful of that and get the feedback from them to ensure that we're not maybe overstepping or overcomplicating what they have to do on a day-to-day basis is good feedback. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate the time and look forward to continued discussion on the bill. Thank you.
Do you want Ms. Ariola to answer that rhetorical question today?
Which one, Mr. Chair? I threw a few out there. Sorry.
like 80% through your silver.
So. Sure. If she can answer speak to any of the things I mentioned, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
And while she's coming up, if we were to change that may to must, would that change your attitude towards mandates by the legislature?
You know, Mr. Chair, nobody is for a mandate until they are.
Thank you for coming up spontaneously. We appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Duckworth, I apologize. Can you point me to the line number we're talking about here again?
Sure. Can you help me out on which topic in general?
Oh, sorry. The MCA reporting.
Yes, that's going to be on page 21. And I will try to give you the exact line here. You see at the bottom where it's,
Yes. Mr. Chair, Senator Duckworth, this request, this change shifts the date by which the department has to post the MCA data to our website. This data is available to the schools before this time. Why we are asking to push it out is because part of what we have to do in order to make it available for public record is confirm some of the data, do some of our own auditing, make sure that things have been inputted, address any sort of questions that we might have with the districts. What we had heard was that attempting to get this these data issues figured out for our school districts was a big ask during September and October, especially for those years when the October date was required, which is when they were putting in new academic standards. So MDE is confident in our ability to get this data out to the districts that are going to be using them on their student body and their performance. What we're asking for is just a little bit of administrative breathing room to make sure that we are not asking too much of our schools during September and October to do something that they already have the information on. It's just we're looking for auditing and editing and proofreading, that sort of stuff. So while our staff are confident that we will be able to beat this December 1st deadline, the intent of that pushback is to provide everybody with, I keep saying breathing room, but frankly, that's, if you've been to this in a school in September and October, it does really feel like there's no time to breathe. So that was the intent behind that. The districts, the schools, the teachers already have this information. This is just for the state reporting responsibilities. Oh, and my name is Megan Adiola from the Department of Education. I didn't identify myself.
That's all I have, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Thank you.
Other member comments or questions, members?
Oh, yeah, Senator Abler, sorry, I forgot. Thank you.
I kind of had a lot of my thoughts expressed, but I do have a question for Mr. Shaver if he wants to come down. And I know he's shy to be in public, but I thought, well, let's just take a run at this.
Thank you, Mr. Shaver. Thank you, Senator.
Yeah, so so I appreciate your testimony, and actually I appreciate just your ability to speak the best you can on behalf of the students. And I don't think that you've been pigeonholed into any particular party in your work. I think you're happy to point out what you see and on behalf of the students, and I truly appreciate that. So you mentioned this tier one, tier two special ed thing. Mr. Chair, and I think we're aware that there aren't just enough to go around, and I mentioned what some of our people in Anoka that are literally working 24 hours in some of these times to get it done to their own health detriment, and they just can't imagine why they're still doing this, so we need more. So Mr. Shaver, can you comment on, you briefly mentioned that you thought that the proposed changes may actually reduce the number of special ed teachers available. Could you comment about that, please?
Mr. Chair, Senator Abler, thank you for the question. One thing that's really important to remember about Tier 1 and Tier 2 teachers of any licensure areas, they're already required in statute to receive professional development and mentorship, something that we support as an organization. So the concern is with some of these new proposals that there's the potential for a duplicative nature of it, right, and adding standards that might not be meetable because the language itself is coming directly from IDEA legislation, and it's the attempt here is to place that into our licensure laws without clear definitions of things like professional development that makes an ongoing positive impact on schools. How are we measuring that? Who's making that decision? Those kinds of things. So our feedback around this has really just been let's make sure clarity is our North Star here, as has been a theme of this legislative session. So let's have the language say what we want it to actually say. What do we mean by that? Because any lack of clarity has the potential to create those barriers. And so you all are the folks up here who respectfully have the magic pens who write statute and can turn that into law that then agencies implement. And so we'd ask you to decide what do we actually want this professional development to look like, right? The language as proposed here doesn't even mention that the PD needs to be in special education specifically. It's just there needs to be rigorous PD. Well, if it's for special education teachers, the language should say that, what we want that to actually look like. Because any lack of clarity just can create barriers for folks who are raising their hands right now and who want to be special education teachers in our schools.
Thank you. Do you know what page it's on in the bill, Mr. Chair or staff or somebody?
Mr. Chair, Senator Abler, 28 and 29 in the DE amendment.
So I'm not, Mr. Chair, I'm not sure, Mr. Shaver, if you're prepared to offer particular specific advice, but I'm fully aware, Mr. Chair, this is an effort to be kind of funny. My pen's not quite as magic as other pens in this committee, but it seems to me that we do want the same things. And so maybe in the spirit of making this more clear, we could actually clarify it to make sure we don't do harm. And maybe I can work with Mr. Shaver after that. I don't want to tie up committee time, but if you'd be friendly to some clarifying friendly language, we can maybe try to work on that, Mr. Chair. All right. So, Mr. Shaver, maybe you can mark up a copy. I got a spare copy you can have here, and you can jazz it up. Do you want to say anything else, Mr. Shaver, or is that good enough for one day?
Mr. Chair, Senator Abler, I think I've said enough for today, for the committee staff.
It's always good to quit while you're ahead.
Mr.
Chair, I try to do that as well. But anyway, so... And Mr. Chair, I just have to, as time goes on, you forget stuff. I forgot that I already voted to confirm Mr. Jett. He reminded me, and his mom was here, and I remembered that. But one thing I didn't forget, Mr. Chair, is that the superintendent from Anoka District is here, and some of the board members, and they even have their own section. Mr. Chair, do you know why they have their own section back there? You know why, don't you?
No.
Because they're the largest district in the state of Minnesota. Thank you. And a good place to raise your kids. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members?
Wow. Well, we're not going to end early because we will, it looks like. But any of our guests as members of a school board, as long as you're here and you came from far reaches of the state, want 60 seconds of our time after our session this morning? I'd like to give you that opportunity, especially if you've never spoken. You can pretend it's like a famous hearing, like the McCarthy or Clarence Thomas or...
Mr. Chair?
No, not yet, Senator.
Oh. I was going to summon one down. They're all
no, summon. If you have someone you want to summon down, we've got a couple people coming down. Thank you. Identify yourself for the record and whatever's on your mind. We'll give you 60 seconds. Yeah, thank you.
My name's Ben Johnson. I represent Renshaw School Board. We're outside of Duluth, Minnesota. We're very small, 338 students. My concern is that over the last few years, we've had a lot of funding that has been put out to schools in forms of grants. We're a very small school district. We do not have a professional grant writer, and so it has precluded us from a lot of these access to funds. And so in the future, when funds are made available for education, we'd like to see those given out straight to the schools instead of in grant forms for, you know, that benefits the larger districts like Jill's in Duluth, where they may have a grant writer on staff, but we don't. I'm the grant writer in addition to being a full-time firefighter, running a small business and chasing after kids. And so if we could streamline some of those funding sources, that would benefit small districts as well. Thank you.
Good job.
Thank you, and that is a pretty great point, by the way. Identify yourself and welcome.
So my name is Jill Lofald, and I am the school board chair from Duluth. So here I am. You gave me an opportunity for 60 seconds, so time me, because if anybody knows me well, I'm a retired teacher and a current debate and speech coach, so sometimes I'll go long. But I've met with many of you either in panels when you've come before MSBA. I've met in your offices when we've come for Duluth and St. Louis County Days. And I continue to support and encourage you to lead with courage and with your heart and to listen. And you do that so well. So here I am to just encourage that 2% funding for the second year. And I know that it can't be new spending, so look where other possibilities are to maybe move a little bit of the funding we gave in other areas and put it back on the formula. You've mentioned yourself, you know that we have districts, myself, our district included, that is coming to the cliff of that ESSER. And so we're gonna see some real hard decisions to be made. And that just brings extra criticism into what education is doing. When we've had historic funding, Senator Swabinski, we've had historic needs. Do you remember our conversation in your office? And so that 2% would go a long way. Even this morning when we talked at the hotel about the fact that there is a blessing to that ESSER money that came in. And I said that too as my first or second year on the school board when that pandemic hit, that we were able to access so much money that fit the needs, but we should have had that money long ago. And all of you know that. It's been decades of underfunding for education. So let's continue to step up and give money. I'm sorry to sometimes say the same things too, that, you know, give some local control. I do believe in some structure and some decisions on your part. You're smart, you're educated, you represent all stakeholders. And so the mandates we can work with, but we also then need the funding for some of those bigger ones as well. So thank you for your leadership. Thank you for always being available to us and making your cell phone numbers available to us. And we just appreciate and thank you for the things we do together. And together we'll always rise.
Thank you. Members, one more, 60 seconds. And identify yourself, please.
Sure. Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I'm Vicki White, and I'm with the Walker-Hackensack-Akeley School District. So I've traveled about 200 miles to be here today with you. First, I just want to acknowledge our MSBA staff, and I see all the hard work they do to advocate for our school districts. I'm also on the delegate assembly, so I'm part of the initial looking at some of the school issues and things that are needed for our school. I come from a school district of about 670 students, and I've been on the school board for 23 years. But two things, I was talking to my superintendent and about some of the things that we need in our school district. One of the things that is the READ Act. I had the opportunity to attend the MSBA summer conference, and I was so happy to see, but I wanted to learn more about the READ Act. One of the things that we need in our school district is that we need more time and we need more money to make this happen in the right way. Also, additional funding to the formula. So I just wanted to bring those two issues that we have talked about at our school, and I'm having a chance to visit with our representatives today before I leave back for my long trip home. And thank you, McGwich, and hope to see you soon again.
Thank you. Well, members, is he being shy?
Yeah.
60 seconds. I'm going to hold you to it.
We can do this in 30.
You get 60.
Good afternoon. My name is Corey McIntyre, superintendent of Anoka Hennepin, and I have, go ahead, Casey, introduce
yourself. Casey Deshane, co-chair of Anoka Hennepin School Board.
So I just want to echo the last testimony, time and resources. We are with you on all the major priorities that you have put in front of us to do better for better results. But some of the timelines are very aggressive, and some are needing more support, either financially or otherwise. Our three key initiatives in our district are literacy, behavior, and workforce. It's real simple. And thank you for helping us move the needle on those things. But from the READ Act to K-3 discipline, those take time and resources to do well. And I know that's your intent, is for us to do these things well, along with building a workforce that we're not driving people away from the classroom. So we are with you, and thank you for listening to the practical implications of the implementation of those desired outcomes, because we share those. You want to add anything?
No, thank you for all the work you do. We really appreciate it.
Did you feel like you were the second speaker at the Academy Awards?
Yes.
When the other speaker?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We are fully aware of the safety and discipline issue, and if any of you have ideas, meet with me, okay? Because we get it, and we know it's paramount for our school districts, and we're all struggling with balancing local control versus issuing ideas that come from the state. So we're all in it together, though, and we want our kids and our teachers and our critical staff to be loving to go to work in school every day. So that's what we all want. So we will meet at our usual time on Wednesday to do markups and take amendments and then final passage of the omnibus policy bill to the floor. If the discussion on Wednesday goes past our meeting time, which it will not, we will meet at 5:30 on Wednesday evening to finish the bill. So why did you just stand back when you said yeah. With that, thank you, everybody. Thank you, board members, for coming down to the city. Say, we are adjourned.